Liegen over een mondkapjesdeal die je hebt gesloten met de overheid. Een deal waarmee je miljoenen hebt verdiend. Dat doet toch alleen Siewert van Liende? Nou, nee. Ik ben Felicia Alberding en in de Mondkapjesmiljonairs duik ik met een team van correspondenten in andere schandalen. Want wist je dat Siewert helemaal niet uniek is? Luister de Mondkapjesmiljonairs in je Podimo-app. Of ga naar podimo.nl/mondkapjes. En probeer Podimo 30 dagen. Podimo.nl/mondkapjes.
Hallo, elke week presenteer ik, Kees van der Bos, de Groene Amsterdammer podcast. Het is een gesprek met een journalist die die week een spraakmakend artikel publiceert in De Groene. Waarom dit verhaal? Was het moeilijk om het te maken? Wat waren de uitdagingen? Wat brengt het ons? En wie is die journalist eigenlijk? Elke week een goed gesprek in de podcast van De Groene Amsterdammer.
And now for something completely different.
We are leaving the EU. We are not leaving Europe.
So in the near future, we will not hear every time the continent is isolated.
No. Well, I don't. I've never viewed it like that. I think for us, we are a European country, I think it's really important that at the last General Affairs Committee meeting, our Minister for Europe, Christopher Pincher, made exactly that point. And we say it many, many times. But the fact that we say it many, many times doesn't make it any less true. We are a European country. We are not leaving Europe. And I think it's really important for your listeners in the Netherlands to understand that. What I'm really trying to communicate is we want to have a very, very strong, close bilateral relationship with a country that we love, the Netherlands.
Dit is Betrouwbare Bronnen met Jaap Janssen.
Hello, welcome to Betrouwbare Bronnen, episode 81. Betrouwbare Bronnen, or as the ambassador of the United Kingdom to the Netherlands, Peter Wilson, says, trusted sources. My guest today is the ambassador. Welcome, Peter Wilson.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be back, Jaap.
Yes, I already had you as a guest at episode 3 of Betrouwbare Bronnen in the very first weeks.
Well, it's a tribute to you that we're now on episode 81 and that you now have a million listeners. So incredibly impressed.
Thank you.
Dit is Betrouwbare Bronnen.
January 31st. This is a very special day, the final day of the UK being member of the European Union after 47 years. For myself, I call it a sad day. How do you qualify this day?
Well, it's definitely a historic day, Jaap, and after 3.5 years of talking about it after the vote that we had in 2016 to leave the European Union, I think it's really important now that we do move on to the next phase. And we are very optimistic about the future. And I think it's really important that whatever side of the debate you've been on in the past, this is something now which is happening. So we are very, very keen to look forward and to look forward with you.
Will you wake up in a complete different world tomorrow?
So not immediately, no, because we'll then be in the transition period and that lasts until the 31st of December. So in terms of the day-to-day changes, not so much. But I think politically, there will be a very significant change. We will no longer be a member of the European Union. That will be an established fact. And that will mean that we can get on with talking about the future partnership that we want with you.
And I suppose tomorrow there will be no Brexit minister anymore.
That is correct. So there are going to be some machinery of government changes, and I think the government will be making announcements about more of those in the coming days. But it is true that the Department for Exiting the EU has accomplished its job. And so because its job is finished, those people will now be doing other things and moving on to other places. And the negotiation of the future partnership will be run by our chief negotiator, David Frost, and out of Number 10, out of the Cabinet Office and through all the line ministries.
And I understood that the Department for International Trade is the main department in this.
Well, there are lots of main departments in this. So we have an important trade negotiation. We have an important negotiation about internal security and lots of other things that we also need to sort out. So really, line ministries all across the government will be involved in this very important next phase.
And all this under the watch of David Frost?
Yes. And ultimately under the watch of the Prime Minister and our cabinet.
Of course. Do you know the song 70 Million Fuck-Ups by Dominic Frisby?
No, I don't.
Well, at the moment, there's a kind of competition in the UK whether the number one song in the UK charts this day, 31st of January, will be Ode to Joy by André Rieu, the Dutch André Rieu. Or a somewhat more a Brexiteer-like song, 70 Million Fuck-Offs.
It was the greatest democratic turnout in British history, I do not scoff. And when the time came to speak, the British said, fuck off, fuck off.
Do you have... Well, you never heard of that song.
I really haven't.
I don't suppose you...
The first I'm hearing of it on your show.
But I think you know the Ode to Joy.
So I think for me, this will be a time to be looking forward to the future. There'll be no singing and dancing in the British Embassy here in The Hague. We will be looking forward to the next phase. Very, very keen to communicate about the partnership that we want with you. So probably less singing and more speaking from me.
Yes. In this 70 Million Fuck-Offs song, some warnings are mentioned of Remainers and EU top people, like there might be food shortages when Brexit is there, there might be no medicine, 500,000 jobs get lost, a cost of £4,300 to every home. All those scary things, are they still possible?
We don't think that's real. In the future, we will be seeing a relationship continue between groups of people who have been trading with each other, who've been communicating with each other, who've been finding things in common long before we both joined the European Union, and that will continue, in my view, long after the UK has left. So I think that the sort of fears that people had, what I would say in response to that is we have shown that we can negotiate together. We've shown that we can reach agreements. We're leaving the European Union on the basis of an agreement, and we are seeking further agreement with you after we leave. But the one thing that's absolutely clear is that the transition period will end on the 31st of December. That is a very, very clear date. We have some work to do before then to reach agreement about the future phase, but it's really important that we do so. And we think both sides have got a lot at stake and that there's everything to be gained from reaching further agreement. And we've proved that we're both capable of doing that.
Many specialists, mainly on the EU side, doubt whether the main agreement can be reached in about 11 months.
So I think in my view, a lot of that is a question of political will. Again, we've demonstrated that we are capable of having extremely complicated negotiations and reaching conclusions on those things. And actually, negotiators do that all the time. There is so much that both sides have to gain from finding ways through and from reaching agreement. I think we've got every incentive to give this the kind of energy that it needs. And we are well prepared. We're ready to begin that next phase. And I believe that the European Union collectively is as well. So we want to get on with it. And that's the clear signal that is coming from our side. I think, you know, after 3.5 years of talking about us leaving, people will be very, very eager to move on to the next phase, whatever side of the argument they're coming from. And that's the really important thing, is that we now get on with it and we move to the next phase.
Yeah. Some people in the UK dream about a Singapore on the Thames. Is that a realistic view?
So I don't think so at all. I think on issues like environmental protection, workers' protection, state aid, actually our standards are very, very high. So in many cases, on environmental protection, our standards are higher than the average EU standard. And we will want to keep it that way. On workers' protection, this government came to power on a manifesto that promised to make Britain the best place for work in the world. And on state aid, since 2001, we've had 6 state aid cases against us, compared to over 60 in Germany and over 40 in France. So just in terms of our orientation as a country and our history, I think it's really important to point out that this is not a race to the bottom. This is an opportunity for us to set high standards, to build a system that really works for our people, and to exercise our own sovereignty in choosing what kind of regulations we have for the future. Doesn't mean that we will diverge on everything. It means that we have a choice. And that's part of what leaving the European Union is about.
So Ursula von der Leyen, when she spoke at the London School of Economics earlier this month, she warned that a level playing field between the UK and the EU will not be there when there are differences on environment rules, on labor rules, on taxation, and on state aid. But you can say to her, she has not to be afraid about that.
No, I absolutely don't think there's any reason to be afraid. And I think there's particularly no reason to be afraid in a country like the Netherlands, which also has a very competitive economy and that has been used to trading with us under high standards for many, many years. I think the really important thing about this, Jaap, is that we want to build a system that allows us to have our own control over our laws, but also that respects the need for fair competition. I think the problem with terms like level playing field is, frankly, that they mean different things to different people. And you get stuck in slightly sort of ideological positions. What we're trying to do here is find a way where we can compete fairly. And fair competition is something that this country thrives on.
Let's talk about the obstacles that lay ahead when talking about a new agreement. What are the main obstacles you see?
So, I mean, I see opportunity rather than obstacles. But I think on trade, I think we've been very clear that we want a Canada-style free trade agreement. And with that comes a shift in perception about the way that we operate in the regulatory sphere. It basically means that we have the freedom to do things differently if we choose to do that. It doesn't mean that we're going to want to do things differently in every single sphere. But the basis of any free trade agreement, including the EU's free trade agreement with Canada, with South Korea, is that you have equivalence. In other words, that you respect each other's standards and you find ways to make sure that that continues to be the case. It's, if you like, a regulatory conversation. I think in internal security, what we want to do is put the needs of our citizens first. And that means looking to find ways that we can continue to cooperate and exchange information, despite the fact that we will be a third country. And we think that that's very much in the interests of both sides. And we think that we have a great deal to offer, and particularly a great deal to offer you in the Netherlands. And then on external security, I think the most important thing about that is we're not going anywhere. We're not suddenly going to anchor ourselves in the middle of the Atlantic. We are your neighbor. Your security is our security. Our commitment to that is unconditional. And that will continue. So in the external security sphere and in the value sphere, we will continue to want to cooperate with our European partners to do good things in the world.
Yeah, but the trouble talking about internal security is that EU security data are not easily being shared with a third country. And the UK is, from the 1st of February on, a third country.
So I think there are ways to do that, and I think it's up to our negotiators to find ways that you know, respect the fact that we're a third country, and also make use of the opportunities that we're offering to continue to share data. I think it's really important that we're starting from the same place. I think it's really important that we declare data adequacy for the UK as soon as we leave the European Union. Our standards are obviously equally high. And it's very, very important that we find a way forward, because ultimately that is the best way to protect our citizens. And I think we all have a responsibility to do that. That's what we're looking for. But I think it's up to you as well as up to us. So it doesn't just depend on what we want. It depends on what the 27 want too.
Yes. And of course, it's in the interest of both of us to have a superb relationship on security. We in Holland, we can remember, or I should say the Netherlands nowadays.
Yes.
In the Netherlands, we remember your presentation together with the defense minister and the chief of the military security service when the OPCW was almost hacked by Russian spies. There might be some cases like this in the future, and then it's in both of our interests to work together as close as possible.
It was a really important example of us standing together, but there have been other examples since. I mean, let me share a couple with you. So to give you an example, on Christmas Day, one of Britain's most wanted men was arrested having his Christmas dinner here in the Netherlands through the kind of close bilateral cooperation that our law enforcement agencies have. And only last Thursday, three criminals were convicted in Birmingham for smuggling drugs through chickens that were being packed in the Netherlands. Again, another example of something that both sides wanted to clamp down on and that we could do by working together. Those kinds of things are very, very strong indeed. And the kind of close cooperation that our law enforcement agencies have, it's very clear that that's strongly in the interests of both sides, and it will continue after the 31st of January and after the 31st of December at the end of this year too.
And talking about external security, defense matters, for example. Nowadays, while NATO still is very important, the European Union also is talking about more working together on defense. And we also, seen from the European Union, want to have the Brits with us, because you have a very strong army and, very highly intelligence on defense. So what does Brexit mean for defense?
So we've always seen the primary mechanism for protecting European security as NATO, as have you, actually. Successive Dutch governments have seen this in the same way. And it is no coincidence that out of the last 12 Secretary Generals of NATO, three have been Brits, three have been Dutch. That's a well-known fact. But I think that says something about the importance that both of our countries attach to that organization. So we will continue to cooperate very tightly in NATO. As far as the European Union is concerned, if the European Union is choosing to conduct operations, I think it's very much up to the 27 whether you want to have mechanisms that allow third countries to participate in that or not. That is very much a matter for you. But the point for us is that we want to continue to cooperate with you on the substance. We have very similar interests. We have identical values. And these are things that really matter to us. They matter to the British people. And it's something that we really do have very, very strongly in common with the Dutch. We're both countries that look out at the world. We're both countries that have good armed forces, although I have to say, I wish that you weren't 26 out of 29 in terms of NATO defense spending per capita. Just had to get the one in.
Shame on us.
It definitely could use with being upped. But the reason that it's important to up that is because the Dutch armed forces are incredibly effective. And we've worked closely together across the world, including in Afghanistan and Iraq. And it means that, obviously, we want to see more of you because you're great.
Dit is Betrouwbare Bronnen, een podcast met betrouwbare bronnen.
Talking about trade, I understood that the UK thinks the best agreement will be an agreement with no tariffs at all and no quota at all. Am I right?
Yes, and in fact, actually, that is what both sides committed to in the political declaration. And in our view, it's not only desirable, and we're both free traders, we both think that that's the most sensible way to operate, but it's also very strongly in the interests of the 27, because frankly speaking, the balance of trade in goods is very much in the European Union's favour. So to impose tariffs and impose quotas just doesn't seem to me to be a terribly simple, sensible thing to do. And I think we can do better than that. Tariffs and quotas are not a particularly good way of managing trade flows. They're not efficient. And that's why when the European Union has negotiated free trade agreements with Canada, with South Korea, there is hardly any tariff component at all. It's just an old-fashioned way to manage trade.
That's also why we call it a free trade agreement.
Exactly. So you're pro-free trade, we're pro-free trade. The balance of trade in goods is in your favour. Putting in tariffs and quotas just doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. So we will obviously need to work through the detail of what that means. But from our point of view, there are better ways to manage trade than tariffs.
Yeah. There's an argument at the moment about fishery. The Prime Minister of Ireland, Leo Varadkar, says we want the UK to open its coastal waters to the EU. Otherwise, you, the UK, could lose access to European markets. Because, he also says, 70% of the fish the UK sells, it sells into Europe.
So, I mean, I think that, you know, this is one of those fundamental points about the change when we leave the European Union. We will obviously take control of our own coastal waters. That's normal and natural.
Of course.
And it's the automatic consequence of leaving the EU. So on that basis, we will want to negotiate the future. And that is going to be for our negotiators to sort out. But I think in terms of this, it's really important. We have been very clear, and I think actually the European Union is sending the same signals to us, which is there's no point in sequencing these negotiations. In other words, fish first. It's really important to do these things together. We have a lot that we need to do to put them all together as quickly as possible, to come to an agreement as tidily as possible, and then to move forward after the 31st of December into a new partnership after the end of the transition period. So I absolutely believe that it is possible to do that. The key component of this is not time, it's political will.
What is more important for the UK, a good new agreement with the European Union or a good new agreement with the United States?
I would say this, wouldn't I, Yap? But the answer is both. The European Union is our biggest trading partner, so it is absolutely important to us that we negotiate a good agreement with you, and that is what we want to do. It's also important to us that our biggest single country trading partner is the United States. And traditionally, our trade flows with the United States have also been high. So we want to do both. There's no reason why we shouldn't do both together. And both the European Union and the United States are saying, obviously, that you want to do these deals with us. The more free trade deals we have, the more free trade there is. And in my view, ultimately, therefore, the better for both of us.
Which agreement will be there first? The one with the US or the one with the EU?
In terms of who gets there first, I think that's as much up to you as it's up to us.
But the trouble for the UK nowadays is you have to make free trade deals with 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 countries.
That's right.
Instead of through the European Union with all the world.
That's right. So we are in the same position that Australia, South Korea, Canada, other countries are in seeking new agreements with others around the world. And with some, we can roll over previous agreements. With others, we will want to negotiate new agreements, for example, with the US, with Canada, with Australia, as well as with the European Union. I think there is a lot of opportunity there. I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to set high standards in all the agreements that we reach. And we are very ambitious for that. We've also reinforced our negotiating team to allow us to be able to do that. And we're very confident that we can accomplish a great deal because we're starting from a very good point.
But in the last, I think, 20 or 30 years, you didn't have civil servants to do those negotiations because it was all done by Brussels.
That's right. But that's why we created the Department for International Trade 3 years ago. And that's why we've been reinforcing our capability on this ever since that time. So we've been talking in preliminary stages to all our partners about what the future looks like. And those talks have actually been very, very positive around the world. And we've had a huge amount of interest. And Liam Fox was in this country when he was trade minister last year, talking about many of those things. It is incidentally something on which we and the Netherlands have worked very closely. So coupled to this desire to do individual free trade agreements around the world is our collective desire to promote free trade. That's where we both as countries instinctively start from. And actually, the Dutch and the Brits have had a very, very close alliance on free trade around the world. And we will, in my view, have a very, very close alliance, you as part of the EU, us as an independent country, in the WTO going forward. There is a huge amount of work to do in that body. And it's work that we will want to do with you.
The US Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross says Britain should find it easier to strike a new deal with the US than with the EU because our economies are much more similar. Is he right?
So that is a very good question to ask, Yap, and you wouldn't expect me to answer it. I am delighted that Wilbur Ross feels that way. I absolutely think that we've got opportunities to do a good free trade deal with the US, but I also think it's important to do a good free trade deal with you. We absolutely don't view that as an either or. We view it as a both. Both are really important for us, and I think both are very, very achievable.
When you expect a level playing field between the UK and the EU, you also expect more or less on most of the things the same rules. But I heard the governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, saying Britain must not tie its hands by accepting EU rules on the City of London after Brexit.
So what we want and what we will have after we leave the European Union is the freedom to set our own rules. And as I said earlier, I think in some areas we will want to set a particularly high standard in regulation and find our own way to achieve particular objectives. And in other areas, less so. But the key thing is that is and will be our choice. I think in financial services, we have a huge amount to gain from trade with the European Union. But London also offers an important service to the European Union. You know, we are the major financial center in Europe, and we will remain so. So in trying to work out a way in which we can cooperate with the future, for the future, we need to find a way that gives you the safeguards that you want, but also allows us to set really dynamic standards that keep pace with change in financial services around the world, and they move very rapidly. And I think that is actually in Europe's collective interest, because otherwise that trade doesn't shift to other parts of Europe. It shifts to New York, or it shifts to Singapore, or it shifts to Hong Kong. And that, in my view, is actually not in Europe's collective interest. And in that sense, it allows me the opportunity to say, we are leaving the EU, we are not leaving Europe. So in that sense, we have a European interest in keeping a major financial center here rather than see it shift to the east or shift to the west.
So in the near future, we will not hear every time the continent is isolated.
No, well, I've never viewed it like that. I think for us, you know, we are a European country. I think it's really important that, at the last General Affairs Committee meeting, our Minister for Europe, Christopher Pincher, made exactly that point. And we say it many, many times, but the fact that we say it many, many times doesn't make it any less true. We are a European country. We are not leaving Europe. And I think it's really important for your listeners in the Netherlands to understand that. What I'm really trying to communicate is we want to have a very, very strong, close bilateral relationship with a country that we love, the Netherlands. We have so many interconnections, our people, our culture, our sport, families who are completely intertwined. It is a very, very unique relationship, this relationship. but it's also one because we are changing the way we relate to the European Union, where we recognize that there is work to do because we're used to interacting through the European Union. We will now be interacting bilaterally, but it doesn't mean we want less interaction. It just means that the nature of some of that interaction will have to change.
Yeah. Since you started as an ambassador in Den Haag 2.5 years ago, you were mainly occupied by Brexit matters. What will change in your work from the 1st of February on?
So actually from the get-go, yeah, one of the reasons why my job is so interesting is because there are so many different aspects of it. Dealing with us leaving the European Union has been a big part of my work, but actually some of the multilateral issues that we've been dealing with, including combating chemical weapons, including reform in the International Criminal Court and the vital work of the international courts in this city, and including some of the issues on which we are globally engaged, like MH17, a wider policy towards Russia, our cooperation through the G20. These kinds of things have also been important components of my job. So I think in the next phase, for me, a major priority will be developing this bilateral relationship between us, redefining the bilateral relationship between us, so that we are able to continue to cooperate, despite the fact that one of us will be out of the European Union and the other one will be inside the European Union. I think that creates opportunity for both of us.
So
while I'm on the subject,
there will not be a vacuum in your life.
There will definitely not be a vacuum in my life. This is a country that keeps us in the embassy very, very busy. I have an incredibly hardworking and wonderful team. And one of the reasons why this is exciting is because there's so much happening in 2020. So if you look at some of the sort of simple bilateral things that are happening, which get me excited in the coming year, we've got the Invictus Games, which are taking place in The Hague in May. They're incredible games.
Is Prince Harry, or as we call him now, Harry,
yes,
also with the Invictus Games?
Yes, my understanding is that Harry will be coming out. He came out last May. He came out the May before. He's really, really committed to these games. It's a really important opportunity for veterans to take part in some really incredible sport. And it's going to be happening right on our doorsteps, Yap. So that's an incredible opportunity. And I think the other thing that Harry himself says is that it's not about him. It's about the athletes. He's the first person to say that. He has absolutely focused attention on these amazing people and the incredible sport that they do, and their extraordinary stories of heroism. But the games is about those people, and that's where he would want the focus to be. Another amazing thing that is happening later this year is there will be a big ship's visit taking place in the early summer. In Rotterdam, HMS Elizabeth is going to be coming into the harbour. That will be a huge, huge marking point, and it will also be a symbol of the defence cooperation between our two countries. And then we are both countries in the autumn that have major climate summits. So you are holding a global adaptation summit in October. How does the world deal with changes to the climate? How does the world prevent floods, prevent droughts? And we are hosting the next round of the UN process, COP26 it's called, in Glasgow in November. So again, there's a lot of bilateral cooperation to make those two events flow into each other that is part of the way that we both operate in the world as forces for good.
Talking about climate, of course, there's a European Green Deal. Will the British policy in the next few years differ very much from that European deal?
So in which sense, yeah?
Well, the European Union has the European Green Deal. And I know the UK also thinks of climate change as a very big problem and wants to cope with it. Can Europe and the UK work together closely also on this matter in the next few years?
No, thanks. I mean, that's a really good question, and thank you for making it so clear. I think the point about this is we will both want to be standard setters for the rest of the world, high standard setters in what we do to combat climate change. I mean, we are very, very proud of being the first nation in the world to legislate against net zero by 2050. The European Union is absolutely wanting to do the same thing. We are very proud of the fact that actually on environmental standards, as I mentioned earlier, we're higher than most countries in the European Union. And if there's going to be any competition, it'll be friendly competition that is a race to the top. So I think that is something that Frans Timmermans will be very happy about.
Yeah. So there can also be some peer pressure from each side.
Exactly, exactly. And it'll be good kind of friendly pressure. But we both will be performing to high standards. We both will be setting an example for the rest of the world. And we will both want to cooperate together in the rest of the world to help others meet those standards too.
Yeah. Working towards Brexit, there were many questions about, the freedom of Dutch citizens living in the UK, UK citizens living in the Netherlands. Is that problem solved?
Because we're leaving the European Union on the basis of an agreement, the withdrawal agreement does deal with citizens' rights. And that means that for the 46,000 Brits who live in the Netherlands and for the more than three times that number of Dutch citizens who live in the UK, they can be very confident about their rights going forward. It's been a really important part of my job to communicate with the many Brits who've made their lives here and who make a massive contribution to Dutch society, which your government has actually always been really nice about acknowledging. And one of the things that I do want to recognize is that for every individual person and their families, these things have a massive impact, and they hit different people in different ways. So we've been trying to get out and talk to as many people as we possibly can. But we've been doing it, and this is the real point I wanted to make, yeah, we've been doing it with the Dutch authorities. So the IND and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs have stood alongside us in every single meeting that we've had around the country to make clear what the deal is for Brits who want to make their lives or continue to make their lives in the Netherlands. And the basic message is a very simple one, which is that for those who are already here, things will not really change. And that message of reassurance by the Dutch government has been really, really important for the Brits who live here. Equally, my government has been sending exactly the same message to Dutch citizens who live in the UK. And my minister said yesterday in the General Affairs Council again, of the 3 million European Union citizens who live in the UK, these are people who have made huge contributions to British national life. We want those people to stay, and we want to make it easy for them to stay. And so again, the message from us is very, very clear. You contribute a huge amount to our national life. You do not need to worry about the future, and we are making it as easy as possible for you to stay, despite the fact that there will be a change because we're leaving the European Union.
But some people already are trying to change their personal nationality. Do I understand you in the right way that that's not necessary?
So, I mean, this is a very, very personal choice for individuals. All I'd say on that is my country is a country that does not have a problem with dual nationality. I understand.
So it's the Netherlands that's.
I understand that there is a different view of that here, but for us, dual nationality is not a problem. I think probably I should leave it at that.
Another question. Has Britain, now Brexit is finally there, more self-confidence than, let's say, 5 years ago?
Well, I think there is a huge sense of optimism and energy in the country at the moment. And I also think that whatever one's view at the referendum in 2016, there is a collective desire to get on with it in the UK. We have a huge amount going for us as a country. We are a pretty self-confident people, I hope in a nice way. And we feel that we have a lot to give, as well as a lot to gain, from being a global, outward-looking nation. It is absolutely vital to us that we preserve strong relationships with our European partners. And as I said earlier, those are personal, they're multifaceted, and they're very, very deep, and they're historically significant as well. We absolutely want to preserve that. But one thing that you and we have in common in the Netherlands and in the UK is that we're both outward looking. We both recognize that there's a wider world out there. We're both by our nature traders and adventurers. And we should be going out into the wider world and doing things together. We have done so many times in the past, and in my view, our best years are yet to come.
Was it sometimes from 2016 on a nightmare, this whole process?
So, I mean, I think that the fact that we've taken 3.5 years to reach this point is definitely not what we wanted. And I think that it is good now to be in a situation in the UK where our way forward is very, very clear, and we are able to communicate that very clearly to our partners. So we have a government with a very clear majority of over 80. We have a united cabinet. We have a very, very clear set of objectives for the next phase of this negotiation. And I think that makes us easier to negotiate with for you. So I absolutely feel that we're in a phase where we can move through this much more quickly than we did through the last phase. I mean, the fact of the matter is, on Friday, we will leave, and that changes things. And so from that new starting point, I think we will be able to do great things together.
Yeah. For the Dutch, it sometimes was a nightmare. The foreign minister, Stef Blok, introduced a Brexit puppet, a blue monster.
He did.
And your newspaper, The Guardian, called it Project Fur, like Project Fear. Did you meet that blue monster yourself?
I have never actually met the blue monster. But all I'd say about the blue monster is he's yesterday's monster. Today, we are looking towards the future. And the future partnership is not a blue monster. The future partnership is a bright and shiny thing, and it's the thing that we need to create together, and I really do see huge opportunity in that.
Frans Timmermans, the Vice President of the European Commission, on Wednesday said to the British people, "You are always welcome to come back to where you belong."
Well, look, seen from his point of view, I think that's an expression of friendship, which I appreciated. I think that the important thing for us is that we've made a decision. It's an important decision. We now need to move on to the future. And what we need to do together is build a practical future partnership. And I feel very, very strongly in the people that I talk to from business, from government, citizens on both sides, that there is an enormous amount of goodwill will to create that kind of future partnership. We will be out, you will be in, but the future is not yet written, and it's up to us to write that together.
Thank you very much, Peter Wilson, for having this conversation.
Thank you so much.
So, this was episode 81 of Betrouwbare Bronnen, Trusted Sources. Thank you for listening. We'll meet again. Deze aflevering van Betrouwbare Bronnen is mede mogelijk gemaakt door de Europese Commissie en door We Nederland.
Betrouwbare Bronnen wordt gemaakt door Jaap Janssen in samenwerking met dag-en-nacht.nl.